a lot of these things we talk about are beyond HIPAA. Matter of fact, we might change this show. Help me with everything.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. Good afternoon, Donna.
Good afternoon, David.
Oh, boy. So here we are, another week.
Another week, another podcast.
Has your news feed been blowing up like mine?
I just ignore my news feed.
I don't think so.
Yes, there's so much news. I just don't even know what to do with myself.
Yeah. The funny thing is, you and I both are probably on a lot of the similar and same news list, but we still send each other the links back and forth.
Oh, I know.
It's like, look at this. Oh, yeah, I saw that. Check this out.
And what'd you think about blah, 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 blah? Yeah, it's just wrong. My work husband and I spend way too much time talking to each other.
You're the only people to understand.
I know. You get me.
So we're going to throw a lot of these recent news reports into a batch today and go through those because there's a lot of good stuff that's come out. And I don't think there's anything worth making an entire show over, but certainly we want to talk about some of these and what's going on with them.
Well, we could make a show about some of them, but ADD kicked in when I tried to decide. And so, you know, I struggle with it. And normally I can decide, but today I said, the news stories, they are aplenty.
So we're going to open up the smorgasbord.
Yeah. Oh, yuck.
But let's talk about what's going on here recently and lately and coming up.
So. Okay. You just went in a loop, buddy. How about we talk where we're going to be?
I'm going to be sitting right here. But we're going to be, so HIPAA Boot Camp coming up August 24, 25. In Stone Mountain, Georgia. If you haven't registered for HIPAA Boot Camp, you better do so. It's filling up quick. You can find out more information at thehippabootcamp.com, or you can go to our website, helpmewithhippa.com/bootcamp. Get all the information there. So how's everything looking on your end of that boot camp thing, Donna?
I was thinking I'd show up and be prepared. You know, there's a lot of time that I spend talking, but most of the time it is productive and not us getting into trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty good. I was proud of you for holding yourself back last time. But you know, the behind the scenes is really where a lot of the work happens, and you know, I have to say hats off to Carla and Krista for doing a lot of that work. So they're putting a lot of
I throw it together and I show up. I put together presentations and I show up. And the team makes us look good.
Yeah. I'm usually the one that goes, this is what we should do. And then I walk off.
Yeah. They don't like you either. Just like So the boot camp, August 24th, 25th. So it is the most productive 2 days you will spend in trying to get training. You will know what you know you don't know.
Yeah.
By the time we're done telling you what you should know.
There's a lot of knowing going on.
I know. Yeah.
So then, oh boy, after that, I'll be in Washington, D.C. in September 16 and 17 at the Unconvention, which is an IT conference. So for those of you who are listening who are IT folks, if you want to check that out, you can find it at unconvention.io.
Yes, and then right after that, September 22nd, I'm at the Georgia HFMA Care Forum talking about how we can do infection control for technology. And then at North Metro MGMA in October 17th in Kennesaw. Then Georgia HFMA Fall Institute, November 8th at Reynolds Plantation, Lococonee, Georgia. I'm really looking forward to that. Getting to go to resorts. I don't get to go to there often. You know, I just go for work. Georgia Association of Orthopedic Executives 2 days later. And I may even try to swing in a day in between those two to another conference. So, you know, after that, I'm going to take a long nap.
For the rest of the year, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, note to self, David.
What are you trying to say? Leave you alone?
Get some work done, brother.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's dive into our topic for the day and get into these news stories, because some of these are very interesting, because some people are back in the news again.
I know. It's looped.
I know. Yeah. But we had some updates to, you know, what we affectionately call the wall of shame. Mm-hmm. And some new features. And we're going to be adding some of that to our website too, probably. But by the time you hear this, it should be there.
Yeah. Under the resources, we're going to really have resources. We have some, but we really haven't featured that. But we're going to do some more with the website. And this is going to be awesome. So you can do that research right within our website.
Yep. So take off and go to our website. And by the time this gets published, it'll be there. And you will be able to see the new wall of shame right inside of our website. But some cool stuff. I don't know if people know about the wall of shame. Some people do, some people don't. But it posts information there about breaches and what's being investigated and past investigations and who's involved and how many patients' records it was. Just it's a lot of good information there.
Well, first, let's be clear. OCR does not care for being called wall of shame.
They don't.
That is a term the rest of us call it. And they would prefer we don't use it. But I just can't imagine us not using it.
I know. I guess technically it's the, breach portal.
Notification portal. No, it's a wall of shame, man. It's, you know, it's what you do. And what they've changed is the ability to pull data out of it is a whole lot easier. You've got the archive stuff that you can dig into the archives and you can see what the resolutions were. Now, not on all of them. They're still updating a lot of that old data. But if the information is in their database, then we're able to see what the resolution was. And you can see, by and large, most of these cases, OCR resolves with corrective action by the entity involved. But what was really interesting is to be able to click a button and say, show me all the ones that are still under investigation. And seeing names on there that I'm like, I knew that. But of those, it was showing the other day, at least, and it was probably more now, but 354 ongoing investigations of breaches over 500. So that doesn't count cases where there was a complaint filed or things were stumbled upon in some other way. These are breaches over 500. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to see how they could be overwhelmed at OCR because they're in charge of guidance and evaluation and all of these things. Plus, there's all these investigations going on, and there's a lot of stuff you're going to have to find out. But what I thought was interesting is they've intended it to make it more consumer-friendly so that you can go see what's going on with your providers.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And everybody's like, oh, man.
That means they'll know I'm not doing it.
It's still one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Look how it shows all of your activity, but then they'll know I'm not doing it. Yeah. Promise you, they know you're not doing it if it's not there.
Yeah. So it's going to be kind of hard for providers and business associates to hide what's going on, even though there should be over 500, there should be some media coverage for it anyway. But
yeah,
the thing I like about it is, you know, often I hear, well, I'm too small. They're not going to come after me. I mean, they kind of base all of these comments on they're just getting audited at random, which, you know, you and I both know is probably better chance of getting struck by lightning than just a random audit.
Right. They're not doing any right now. They still haven't released the results of the ones they did.
Right. But the chances of you being audited because of tons of other reasons, hackers and insiders. And I mean, I got a client right now going through. It just now kicked off something that I'm sure will end up being an audit because somebody left the company, left the practice, and decided that they would take some patient information with them.
Yeah.
Can't do
that. So that's
that.
Going to be, and wait, we need to clarify, it's not an audit, it's an investigation.
Right. Yep. And so that, you know, those are the things I try to let people know, that don't get hung up on all this, you know, hacking or auditing and all that. I mean, yes, those things can happen, but there's a tons of other ways that you can get on the radar and become an investigation. And by going to the breach notification portal, people can actually see, wow, wait a minute, there's people on here that are the same size of business I am and maybe the same type of business that I have.
Right. You know, and they're down the street, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some of them are like, whoa, I actually know that person. I met them at a conference or they're across town or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know,
there's a very tiny statistical likelihood that you would be audited or even have one of those big major cha-ching settlements. There is a high statistical likelihood that you will experience some sort of breach, whether it be an external attack or an insider issue, one of those kinds of things that could result in an investigation. That's that's well over 50%, where the others are well over under, you know, I would say those others are under 10%, even a single digit number, whereas the chance of you really getting caught in the day-to-day stuff bringing you down, massive. Or, you know, I would say even potentially in some cases, depending on the scenario, over 75%.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let's talk about some of those things that have been in the news, because there's so many different ones, but all with the same theme.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to start with is how, you know, most people think of ransomware as being a very bad thing, but sometimes it could actually work out for good.
Yeah.
We actually have two cases that came up where a ransomware investigation actually found that there were hackers in the system before ransomware came about. So had it not been for the ransomware, they wouldn't have found the hackers.
So we have two cases. Both of them were hit with ransomware in May. So it makes you wonder if it was, I don't think it was the WannaCry, but it could have been. They were both hit with ransomware in May, and that they did the forensics investigation that you're supposed to do. They didn't just wipe and reload.
Good job.
Note to self, all you techies out there, remember, you can't do that anymore. You've got to evaluate. And this is exactly why. Boom. You know, another mic drop moment. But so there's two different ones. There's Women's Health Group of Pennsylvania, and they notified 300,000 patients. Mm. It was a great day to be them. And reference that $380 per record average cost. In healthcare, let's say that it's half that. That's still not a number I want to deal with. But anyway, they got a hit. They did the forensics. And when they did the forensics, good news, ransomware, no exfiltration. However, they realized they had been hacked and that hackers were in the system since January of this year. Mm. So January to May, stuff going on. They hadn't noticed it. The ransomware prompts the investigation, and that forensics finds the other problem. So the notification isn't about the ransomware. The notification is about the hack that the ransomware helped them find. Yep. So this is exactly why you have to do these things. And then of course, now we got another one right in my backyard. So, you know, these two were back-to-back announcements, and this is where I'm like, how can I cover all of this? Peachtree Neurological Clinic had the same case. They got hit in May. They do the forensics. Everything's good with the ransomware itself, but theirs was even worse. They found a, quote, unauthorized individuals had been accessing their system since February 2016.
Oh, wow. Over a year.
Yeah. And it's not clear. It just says unauthorized individuals. And it didn't say hacker. It said unauthorized individuals. And it's not clear whether, you know, so you can tell there might be more to that story.
Maybe an ex-employee or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but there's more to that story. I can't wait to hear it. Mm-hmm. Because obviously that's a cautionary tale right there. Mm-hmm. It's a tale of somebody. It's somebody's tale. On fire. But the fact that in both of those cases, had they not been hit by the ransomware and done what they were supposed to do, how long could those have been going on?
For a lot longer.
Yeah, a lot longer. So in those scenarios where everybody's like, I don't understand why we have to have these forensics guys like our friend David Benton, mm-hmm. who was on the podcast with us. Shout out to the guys at Altep. They've now joined another company. And I don't know the new name. But Philip and David were both in the original HIPAA boot camp back in May. And we just really got a lot from being hanging out with those guys. We really like them. And that's great. That's fine and dandy. But there's a reason they get out there and look around, and the horror stories they have to share. You know, you're like, please. And the fact that they have to say over and over, save your logs, save this, check your third parties, all of these kind of things, because they keep seeing it over and over. Those forensics guys, you need them after ransomware, if nothing else, to make sure nothing else is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to understand, too, that forensics people do forensics, not your typical IT vendor that's doing work.
Please don't call David and ask him to do forensics.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, I have had that happen, but I'm just telling you from an IT provider perspective, that's typically way outside. I mean, your IT provider may say, oh, yeah, we can do some forensics, but you need to be careful with that because that's a specialty field. Mm-hmm. And yes, we can do a level of forensics, but mm-hmm. I would say get somebody who does just forensics for a living to do that, not somebody who can do some forensics.
Right. You need the real CSI.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is
not somebody that played one on TV.
Right. And another thing to think about is in some cases, these things may end up becoming a court case, and you need people that can testify as an expert witness and all that kind of stuff. And your local IT guy is not going to be the one that needs to be testifying.
I don't know. Some of them think they're brilliant and they can do that.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, those are the ones you want to be careful with.
But, you know, as a former law enforcement officer, no, I do not want to be testifying to this because I will get chewed up and spit out in court because this is not something that I should be testifying for, and neither should most of the other people that are doing the frontline IT work. Get somebody who does forensics for a living that understands how to build a case.
Yeah, it's the professional thing. Why we say you need professional IT support to run your day-to-day, you need professional forensics to evaluate these kinds of scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Which, guess what else they can find? They can find insider issues as well as hacks. Can they?
Yeah, I know. And that's a big issue. We've seen that a lot more in the news.
Yeah. So, you know, statistically, we talked about statistical a few minutes ago. Statistically, you're more likely to be hit by a major insider breach,
mm-hmm.
whether it's your own employees or those of your third-party partners.
Right.
So those have been in the news as well in some very interesting ways. And this one I forgot to put in the notes, David, that I'm going to touch on because it's like, wow. There's Tewksbury Hospital has found an employee that has been essentially snooping for 14 years.
Oh, my gosh.
For 14 years, this person's been doing things that were inappropriate.
Did you not change your systems out in 14 years?
Yeah, I know. Really?
What in the world?
Apparently, it's one of those things where, you know, the staff... I always hear the story. My people have been with me forever. I don't have to worry about it. I know you've heard that.
Yeah, I have.
This is exactly, okay, there you go. There's another mic drop on that argument. 14 years that they were in there doing things they shouldn't do. So that's a whole other story. But I was really focusing on the ones where people are going potentially to jail. Now, we talked about privacy officer liability in a recent episode, but let's talk about what's going on with... There's one case that I find very interesting because it's a different approach by a local DA. And then the other one is they're dealing with potential prison and fines that don't have to do with HIPAA yet. Hmm. So the first one is in Oregon. Oregano. The one in Oregon is this St. Charles area where a local DA has filed charges against a health system employee, Danielle.
I was waiting on you to pronounce this.
Danielle Vaca, who inappropriately viewed medical records of 2,459 patients. The records accessed between October 8th, 2014, and with a date that specific, you got to assume that's when they started working, mm-hmm. and January 16th of this year. So, again, over 2 years of activity. Oh, they've been with me for a long time. I don't have to worry about it.
They don't have enough work to do.
They're just going in and out of records. But sad thing is that they didn't really find where she was doing anything but being nosy, just being nosy. And if they, in their investigation, they determined she was mostly just being nosy, and they made it clear, the DA made it clear that had it not been that, if they had found any other things, there would be felony charges. But these are not felony charges, but they are criminal charges with a maximum penalty of 2 years in jail.
Mm.
I know, but dang. Yeah. And it's classifying it as a computer crime.
So curiosity may not kill the cat, but it to sure put it in jail.
That's right. Chunk, chunk, lock that though. So, you know, people, oh, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm just looking. Well, yeah, if you're looking around that much for over 2 years or 14, there's something more going on there. So, it's like you can't control your need to know about others, whatever that is. You're still not supposed to do it. You're not supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're using the computer to go look at things that you shouldn't do. And so, like this district attorney seems to be doing. Now, again, I'm not a lawyer and I don't know the legal aspects of this case. But it seems that by charging them with a computer crime for snooping is essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That it's going around the fact that HIPAA doesn't have anything in it. It's not even talking about HIPAA.
Right. It's almost like one of those state crimes, like a lot of them are doing nowadays. So, listeners, if you don't know, the states are getting involved with privacy and security, and they're making separate laws in addition to HIPAA that can turn around and smack you.
Right. Yeah. So, without doing the legal details behind this case, which I wasn't up for. but if it gets more interesting, I'll have to. I won't be able to control myself because I'm too curious.
Yep.
I'm allowed to read about that stuff. So on that same track, we've got Western Virginia University Medical Center. There's an employee who has admitted to using someone else's personal information that they got from their job at the medical center to commit bank fraud in June 2016.
Okay. So,
yeah.
That's a smart one.
Mm-hmm. So, she's Angela Roberts, 41-year-old Angela Roberts. So, don't know how long she worked there, but this happened back in June 2016. It's coming out, now. But the breach was announced and all that other stuff. But the bottom line is, they're using the bank fraud charge to say, it's not, there's that criminal part, and HIPAA could still be used because there was clearly malicious intent in the access. Mm-hmm. So, but 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine is what they're saying they could charge there. So, to think that it's harmless is just plain old wrong. Just wrong. Mm-hmm. And that identity theft is a bigger and bigger and bigger problem. And the medical identity theft is expanding dramatically. There's some new reports on that I'm still evaluating. But the overall theme here is, don't get caught with your hand in the cookie jar or your nose where it doesn't belong.
Yep.
And that's it.
Another thing too that, you know, we heard a lot of when we went to the HIMSS conference is when it talks about HIPAA and enforcement and all that, I mean, they really kind of went out of the way to say, you know, they're not really out there trying to do harm to your business with fines and all that. They want to change behavior and they want things to be done right. So that's one side of it. But when you start getting the state and local authorities involved, they're not looking at, oh, we don't want to harm you. We want you to change behavior. They're looking at, we're going to nail you to the wall for violating a crime.
Right.
So it's very different in the approach. And now both sides are involved and they can both come after you for different reasons. Now, to me, that's even more reason to say, hey, now might be a great time for me to start getting this stuff together and doing things right, because it's not, you know, old HIPAA schmippa anymore. Now it's, okay, I'm going to have to deal with the federal or local or state authorities, even if HIPAA never gets involved.
Right. And you know, that's another point in the, you've got to focus on doing what's right, because while the privacy officers themselves may not be liable for employees' activities, unless they're, of course, involved in doing it or the cover-up, but the company can be held liable for not trying to prevent their employees from doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And so if you've got people that are doing these things for such a period of time, and I believe the DA in the Oregon case even quoted saying that he had received unsolicited, which was important, phone calls from the patients involved in the case saying that they felt so violated.
You know? Class action.
Yeah. So you're looking at a much bigger thing here. And to say, all right, well, this employee's been there since 2014. And they didn't catch it until January 2017. And it's been going on all this time. And who knows what's going to happen with Tewksbury. But apparently that one was just curiosity too.
Mm-hmm.
But that I can, because of my job, I can know all of these secrets of your life. That's just unacceptable.
Yep.
So,
and it doesn't matter if you're, you know, HIPAA business associate or covered entity anymore. A lot of these things we talk about are beyond HIPAA. Matter of fact, we might change this show. Help me with everything.
Yeah. I don't know. We have talked about what else could we call it, but we got nothing. So if you got some ideas of what we could call our show, be sure to send us an email or tweet us or book us or whatever. We're interested in ideas, or at least have a second name. But that does take us to the next big news item. And this one just actually came out today. So literally hot off the presses. Anthem, you know. Those
Not
people
again. No.
That got the 80 million people breach, and they just did a deal to settle a class action suit. Hey, reference class action, 115 million. They just stroked a check. Well, they're waiting for it to get approved. They've had to announce 18,000 Medicare patients in 21 states. New breach.
That's less than $2 a piece.
Well, the 115 million, yeah. And you know, most of that goes to the lawyers.
Right.
Not that I'm, you know, disparaging the lawyers, but that went on since 2015. You know, do the math. Yeah, there's a lot that goes on there. So
what happened this time?
This time, what had happened was, and you see Anthem now going to OCR. What had happened was,
and they're still under a cap though, right?
Well, you know, I don't know that they've never released the results of that investigation that I know of. We should look. That's something we should look on the new site to see if it's still under investigation or what the resolution is, because it should be.
All right. We'll do that.
You know, we're going to have to start doing this extra research. You're going to have to help out, David.
I'll do it. I'm on it.
All right. You look into those things, the things we've talked about. And if we never mention it again, y'all know who to blame. But in this case, and this also speaks to that need to vet your business associates. And other people are like, well, the law says you just have to have a contract. You don't have to do due diligence. It's beyond following the nitpicky letter of the law now. Let's do what's right for our patients and our business. And even, you know, Devin McGraw mentioned in the discussion at HIMSS when it was talking about, do you need to do more than sign a contract? And her point was, you know, from a legal perspective, the contract, the business associate agreement, is really all that's required. But it would make sense for those high-risk folks to, you know, for you to check them out and protect things and protect your business and your patients. So she can't obviously say, yes, you should do this, but she thought it would be prudent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same thing as always. Do I have to get this in writing? Well, no, you don't. But if anybody ever argues about it, I'm going to ask you if you did it. Can you prove it?
Right.
You know, so it's the same stuff. But this particular group is Launch Point Ventures. They're an Indiana corporation, and they do some sort of case management, it sounds like, when I was reading it. And so this one is another, it's another one of those identity theft things. So Launch Point learned in April that, and really all it says is that an employee could be involved in an identity theft something. So not a lot of details on how they found out or any of that kind of stuff, but they called in forensics and said, hippus. By May the 28th, they had found that other non-Anthem data was involved, which it's not clear whether they do case management for other people. You know, do they have other, you know, HIPAA data out there or not? Other PHI? Don't know. But by June 14th, they had notified Anthem that the employee in question had emailed those 18,000 patients' data, emailed it to their personal email account in July 2016. Yeah. So they found out in April that they did it in July 2016. So, a year later, Anthem learns about it. Now, LaunchPoint, they're making it clear. Look, we terminated that employee, and we're working with law enforcement, and we're doing all of that. And there was a quote that the employee has been incarcerated,
no,
and is under investigation by law enforcement for matters unrelated to the emailed Anthem file. So, not the HIPAA stuff, but I'm going to think maybe the identity theft. I'm going to think there's this, you know, fraud and all that stuff involved. And, you know, that incarcerated designing women, you know, my unfortunate incarceration, Anthony's unfortunate incarceration. Rest in peace. But the overall case is clearly about identity theft and utilizing this access to information that you have to do your job. I mean, whether it's medical identity theft or personal identity theft, it's a wealth of information. It's wide and it's deep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like all you're doing is protecting a little creek. You know, let's keep this tiny little creek trickle moving. No. It's a great lake is what the healthcare data is like compared to a creek that what a lot of other companies may consider things. So that lack of understanding of the wealth of knowledge, and then you get into, you know, okay, well, they say that they're enforcing existing policies and protocols. They're reinforcing and evaluating additional safeguards to prevent similar incidents from occurring in the future. Okay. Well, what is it that we talk about all the time? You know, that need to audit and evaluate and look at the stuff. And yeah, there's this expensive data loss prevention stuff. And I mean, yeah, it's expensive to smaller companies. And by and large, we're talking smaller companies. And even some larger ones are like, whoa, I don't know about implementing that. But that's watching for those emails and trying to detect when data is leaking out of the organization. But that's not easy to maintain or cheap to put in place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you've got to do more about those things. And of course, it depends on your systems. And who knows what kind of system that LaunchPoint Ventures works with. But, you know, we know that the Oregon case and St. Charles, as well as the West Virginia case, those, if they had a tool like our friends at Sphere have, where it's monitoring the back end. And one of the points about the expense of the data loss prevention was you have to review all the alerts and you get alert fatigue. And that's the beauty of what Sphere does, is it's behavioral analytics. So it's not this, okay, alert me whenever this happens and then I have to figure out whether or not I care. It starts to learn what you care about. It cares what you care about. But it can take information, you know, as long as the system can generate a standard log of access, you know, it can evaluate it and learn what you should be doing and what you shouldn't. And so by and large, most of these cases, you know, the Tewksbury case, at least the other three, I don't know about LaunchPoint, granted, but you know, if there's an EHR involved, it should have detected it.
Mm-hmm.
If they had those things, because it would notice the downloads and all those kind of things if the systems are logging things appropriately. You know, they can't control the data they get. Garbage in, garbage out is the
programmers say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did look at the Wall of Shame for Anthem.
I wondered what you're doing because you weren't engaged in our conversation.
Well, you know, you gave me a task. I took it and I ran with it.
I didn't mean right now.
There is nothing on the Wall of Shame that explains anything other than what happened. So it doesn't give me any information about a corrective action plan. So there you have it.
It says it's closed?
No, it doesn't. It just gives information about the breach itself.
Is it under the archive or is it under your investigation?
It's archived.
So according to that, then it should be closed and the investigation is closed. And, you know, they probably said, dudes, what you going to do? But not for us to worry about. What we're supposed to worry about right now is that you've got all of those cases where you've got to start checking on people to protect your business, to protect your patients. I mean, that people feel violated even though all somebody did was look when they shouldn't.
Yeah, I feel violated when people look.
No, you don't. No, you don't. I know you better. You want people to look. You're always doing something. So,
not me.
Yeah. So under the, you know, news aplenty, that is why I had a hard time deciding which of those topics to talk about. And they blended together really nicely into, you know, can we tell in advance in less than 14 years, in less than, you know, in 2 years or whatever, can't we find these cases? Can't we learn about these beforehand? And I'm sure a lot of these companies would prefer to have found it themselves instead of law enforcement notifying them. You know, if you had found it earlier, people are criminals. That happens. And you don't know what's happening in people's lives. There are so many stories that, you know, it's sad what happens to some of these people.
Yeah.
You know, people get cancer and then they need money. So they, you know, you would never think of them doing it until they're in a position where they turn to this and they say, this is my only option, which is sad, but it's what some people do.
Yeah. Can't look at somebody and say, oh, yeah, they're a criminal.
No, I know, really. You know,
wish it was that easy, but no.
No. So all of those fall under that task. And just for fun, I don't know what to file this one under, but I felt it was something that we should mention.
Yeah, well, we talk about, you know, we've always talked about the Internet of Things numerous times. But the reason why we talk about that Internet of Things is so that people get an understanding, especially as they do their risk analysis stuff, of, you know, what other things are connected to my network that I need to be concerned about or I need to keep an eye on. And this is one that I've never heard of before.
I know. I was like, wait, what?
So, yeah, in a casino.
And you know, they care about security.
Yeah, like they got better security than anybody on the planet.
Yeah, but usually,
Casino was hacked, get this, using a fish tank as an access point.
A fish tank. That's right. That's what we're saying, people. A fish tank.
So, I mean, I don't. I guess they had it connected to Wi-Fi so that.
But you know, that's the whole point of the Internet of Things is that things can be monitored, and so the service that manages those huge fish tanks, you know, they can know the temperature and the salinity and all of those things. With sensors in the tanks, you know, I think there's even that job, you know, there's a show or something about tanked, and it's these massive fish tanks that are just the thing.
I just thought it was funny that fish need Wi-Fi.
I know, really. That's what it is. They're all out there with their little phones.
Or maybe they're fake fish, and they, I don't know. I don't know, dude.
Yeah, there you go. But a fish tank was connected to the network for whatever reason. You know, I don't know if the goldfish were going on strike without a Wi-Fi. We'll be more productive and show up more if we have Wi-Fi. But that was the tool that somebody used. They scanned, they found this thing, and it was their way into the network.
Yep. So there you go. You know? There you go.
So now you got people who work in the, you know, hospital or a nice big office, and they go running in and look at the fish tank. Blub, 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 blub.
Well, you know, nowadays everything is, you have to think about everything that's connected. I just read an article yesterday about the Roomba, you know, the little vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It was like the Roomba's going around your house, and it's basically mapping out where your furniture and all that stuff is. Mm-hmm. and it's going to send information back to like Amazon or whoever, saying, "Hey, they don't have a couch because I'm not finding one. So let's send them ads for couches." But you know, somebody's going to hack into it and have a blueprint to your house because your vacuum cleaner's sending that data somewhere.
Yeah, there's so many things that it could learn, and you just ignore that little thing. You know, it's like the IT person working on computers. You ignore them.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. I'm sure we'll be having an episode where we mention somehow somebody got hacked by a Roomba.
There's just too much of that, you know. I went back and looked, and we did a thing, the IoT Rise of the Machines in 2015.
Oh, wow, been that long?
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it's been that long. But yeah, we were talking about it then, and I think everybody blew us off. But that episode, the things we were talking about now, or then, you know, here's evidence of what we were saying. Hey, you know, your refrigerator's going to be hacked and your toaster, mm-hmm. You know. So, and those things are things in offices. So, it's important.
Yep. So, anyway, that is our show for today, folks. Want to thank you for listening. Remember, you can always visit us on the web at helpmewithhippa.com. Don't forget the HIPAA boot camp is coming up. So, if you're interested in that and want more information, you can either reach out to us or you can go to thehippabootcamp.com to get all the information, and we'd love to see you there. Also, you can review us on iTunes and Stitcher. We're there as well. We're also on all the social media outlets except the ones we're not on. So you can find us on the most popular ones anyway. So remember, for Donna and myself, that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims. The show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhippa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.